Hi, welcome back to another Writers After Dark. I'm Summer Brooks, and we're here because good stories start with the writers, since wherever there's a story, someone's either making it up or writing it down. And my guest today is Luke Arnold, actor and writer and just general raconteur, from what I'm reading about him. Sci-fi fans, fantasy fans may remember him or recognize him from the TV series Black Sails, but he's here today because he's got his first novel out in print, due out in stores February 25th, I believe is the date.
Yes, I think that's right in America. Yeah. It's. And thank you very much for having me. This will be fun.
Problem. The book is The Last Smile in Sunder City, which is kind of a urban fantasy, hard-boiled detective, noir thriller, post-apocalyptic death of magic stew.
That sounds good. I haven't heard it quite described that way. I like it.
Well, I'm a fan of fantasy. I'm a fan of the detective genre. And when they get mixed, it excites me. It interests me. And this is a standout sample of that crossing of genres because your world building is absolutely mind-boggling. Where in the world did you come up with Fetch Phillips and the now broken world he lives in?
So for me, look, I really loved that mashup too. And that kind of came from reading like Raymond Chandler stories as a kid. My dad had those books and I kind of got into it, you know, started reading those books. And then we'd watch like Bogart movies together. So I always really loved that idea. I just love those characters, that world, the snappy dialogue, the, you know, just that those black and white images of those, you know, American cities at that time and the style of the whole thing. And then also, it's funny, I didn't read heaps of fantasy, but I always played video games, watched a bit of anime. And so then would like reading Discworld books, did a bit of a kind of mashup sometimes. There was actually a game called Discworld Noir, which I think was probably my first experience of seeing, okay, those two things fused for the first time. So that was always there. And I think I always, you know, and then look, when I was really young, you know, about that time, would either do drawings or write stories that featured those worlds mashing up. And, but it really took till kind of, I think really when I finished Black Sails actually is the first time I sat down and really went, okay, if I want to tell a story like that, what can be examined? What's the most interesting? I think I like the style, but then something in it, I worked out what I can actually examine both in myself and in the world around me by fusing those two worlds together. And so having kind of at the same time being able to explore this broken world as well as the one that was once there, I don't know, gave me a lot of stuff to work with.
what was your approach to slowly, I guess to build the world as you go along, to give people a feel of this world? You're sort of, as a reader, you're exploring it, you're discovering it as Fetch is running around trying to find pieces of a trail to follow to find this missing vampire. And there are certain things that he takes for granted in the world around him as he's moving through it, but he's describing them in such lush ways that you can actually see the decay, the falling down buildings, the broken people, especially the former magical creatures. I guess I should step back. This isn't just a story about magic in a world. It's about the world putting its pieces back together after the magic stops. Because this world just wasn't people using magic. The magic was in the environment. It was in the air. It actually allowed certain creatures to live and then greed happened and everything got broken. Wow, that sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Well, absolutely. And it's interesting. Like I, for me, the idea from it originally came, it was a much more kind of internal idea and a more like thematical, like the idea that the world seems magical when you're when we're kids. And then as we grow up, we make decisions, and suddenly you look around one day and that magic is lost, and you have a feeling that it's kind of your fault. Like you made certain choices and went down certain roads. Now, that was the idea. Of course, right now, there was always, I guess, a bit of kind of, human destruction and environment in there, but it's really hard to tear this kind of, broken world away from what's happening in the world right now. So, as bad as it all is, it's given me plenty of fuel for writing this. But when you talk about the kind of answer to the first bit, when you talk about, Fetch kind of walking these streets and how we discover the city, I really wanted it to feel like, kind of like those old detective stories where this could be told to you by someone at a, like this could be Fetch at a bar after too many drinks, giving you a long-winded account of this particular time in his life. And so it's like in, and they kind of do that in those books. Like if you read some of those detective stories, whether it's in New York or LA, they kind of take for granted that like, okay, if you head down, where the sun set till across to Santa Monica, and then you can head up, turn around into Silver Lake. Like that, there's a certain amount of stuff that you go, even if you've never, it doesn't know you picked up the book and you have a map of Los Angeles in front of you, but it gives that expectation and that helps with the flow and gives it a sense of familiarity. But you also, won't expect everyone to know how long the La Brea tar pits are there, or what happened when this mayor was in power and that kind of stuff. So it's been a balancing act of trying to make it feel like, Fetch is talking to a friend who has, and that this place is real enough that he can whittle off a few things, expecting you to know that they're a real thing, while also finding reasons for him to indulge in that descriptive storytelling. And one is that I think the genre of that, being a detective, even though it's a man for hire, but because I'm going in that genre, I think as readers we kind of accept that these guys look for details. That's how they put the mysteries together, put their cases together. So we kind of accept that they will be, looking at the minutiae of certain things around them. And the other one for me is that because Fetch feels personal guilt about what happened, it's when he's describing, especially as you said, the other magical creatures around him and how they're suffering, it's all personal for him. And because he feels connected to what happened, why the magic is gone, everything he looks at that is worse than it was hurts him personally because he feels like it's his fault. That gives him a reason to describe those things and to kind of, and in the way he does, rather than just be throwing it off for exposition. So I think there are a few of those elements that have allowed me to kind of indulge in the genre and do the world building and try and, even though there are some big info dump moments, but I'll make sure it's tinged with something that's connected to him.
The most poignant one that I hit upon early was the one chapter about Fetch's family. Something happens to them. He sort of gets scooped up and taken to an enclave where they sort of hand-wavy him magic away, even though magic exists in the world at this point. So as a child, he's told that, oh no, those magical creatures you used to see running around, that's just your imagination. He's actually trying to be brainwashed into rejecting magic. And that the way you described the echo of an unrealized potential or a pain of something missing that he didn't know he was missing, would that struck a chord like you wouldn't believe. I'm like, Fetch, I can empathize with Fetch. He's my brother by another mother here. But
That,
those.
I mean, that's great. That's really great to hear. I love, it's been really interesting, seeing, It's interesting when you write a character as flawed as Fetch and who make does a you know a lot of things that you want to slap him or you get frustrated or I put a lot of my worst parts into him and also other parts of human nature, kind of especially in this first book. He's a long way from the hero I think we'd all want to be, or how we'd, there are also, there's certain expectations in fantasy, I think, that you think, okay, they're going to be met with a question. They're going to think about it for a couple of pages and then they're going to pick up a sword and rush out there and try and get things done. And that's really not our guy here. But I'm glad to hear that from the few things in there that we do still empathize with him, sympathize what he's going through, might not agree with everything, might really wish he'd get his shit together sooner rather than later. But that there is something universal about always, like Fetch just never feel he's always out of place. And I think because of that, because of being moved, out from his family so soon, brought into another place where he always knew something was wrong. This sense that, okay, people are telling him this is how you're meant to be. Here are the rules, but always feeling like, I think this is a crock of shit. And that's stopping him, but not, and all that really doing is, not going like actively then going, I'm going to uncover this and tear it apart, but just kind of it just stopping him from ever connecting with anyone or really buying into it. And I think that's always, which is often what happens, that, a lot of us that have that feeling don't get to jack into the matrix and leave the world behind. It generally just makes people kind of a bit disinterested and unsatisfied, and you still kind of go along with it, but with a sense of like, I think there's something else, but I don't know how the hell I get there.
Yeah, there's like a there's a sense of loss combined with a sense of just self-medicated apathy. And he needs a reason to keep on going, and he's using having jobs to do for people, 'cause he's a man for hire, not a investigator. He's like, hire me for whatever. And he uses these little tasks to keep moving on, and the closer he gets to figuring out what's happening with his missing vampire, people are trying to stop him, and that sort of prickles his obstinateness, and he's like, yeah.
We get a touch of it here, and I do the like I if we compare it to our world, I think so often, we like, we can go like, oh, things are really bad, but I want to make them better. And then you're like, but I don't know what to do. And someone's like, well, what's this documentary or something? And you do it. He goes like, yeah, here's the things you could do to be better. And you're like, great, I'll do that. And then you wake up the next day. And we don't. Some amazing people do. Some amazing people are so great at jumping into action. But so many of us are caught up with, we've got our own stuff in our head and things we got to get over, and we always worry like, but am I? Is this actually the right thing to do? Or and all just that human stuff. And I think it's interesting to put the expect, go into a fantasy world where we expect a different kind of hero, to put someone in who I relate to more, which is someone who, takes a long time to get where we think we should, where we think they should be going. And does a lot of other things to himself. The self-medication and, the talking himself around and the beating himself up and, or looking for other people to beat him up, but just all his ways of kind of getting in his own way and stopping himself from doing, what is that, the little overarching tension of the whole thing is that feeling that, maybe if he got up tomorrow was a better guy, he could actually make a real difference. But the fear that maybe he can't, and there's a bit of that tension in the book of going like, okay, no, there's something here. Maybe the magic can come back. Maybe there are, it can all be reversed, but also that fear that like, actually, no, maybe this is it now, and maybe we've just got to deal with it.
Well, the quest leads to, I'm not going to go into spoilers because people really should read this book for themselves, but there's already a second chapter in Fetch's story. Can you talk about that at all yet?
Yeah, so look, I see my original plan for this was to, it like those old detective stories is have a whole bunch of individual mysteries that are self-contained and could do up. Yeah, could tell as many Fetch Phillips mysteries as we wanted with a little serialized thread in there that brings it all together. I think through the nature of then revising this first book, some more of those, serialized elements were in there than I probably wrote in the first few drafts. Some part of me thinks as well that by a little bit of that was maybe by it being published by Orbit, who are so they're fantasy sci-fi publishers. Just some of those, you're playing a different genre than I guess. It was more pitched like a detective story that happens to take place in a magical world and lean more into that. I think the fantasy side of it's really been coming out, which I think is great because I still envision many books in the series. And with each of them, so yes, there will be many books in the series and each of them kind of with its own mystery, but that also do. Yeah, I guess the beauty of Fetch is he doesn't progress as a character too quickly. There are little pieces there, and each one we want him to deal with something else, that might help him get closer to the point where, which I think we all feel like there's got to be a quest at the end to try and fix the magic, right? And so playing with that tension, letting Fetch piece himself together piece by piece. But yeah, second one is done. That is, we're just kind of at proof stage now, so looking at that. So yeah, I'm hoping we don't have an exact date for it yet, but fingers crossed we get that second one out this year as well, which will give a nice momentum to the series and got a few more planned. I also think it's the fun thing where, because of the nature of this kind of procedural thing, there's room in between the big novels for shorter stories or to tell more Fetch Phillips cases in other mediums. Because yes, I've created a lot of this world, and there's some parts want a whole novel, and I reckon there's a way to explore little species and parts of the world in shorter versions too.
So what do you have your eye on for other medium, just short stories, maybe like ebook novellas or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. It could be ebook novellas. It's early days, but there's been. I guess as you said before, that there's I write in a very visual manner, and so there's been some discussions about the idea of how we take that to screen, which I think would be really great. And I think there's a thing. I think maybe that was my own buffer as well of like leaving some gaps in there so that we don't get into that. If you make a TV show or we do a web series or however it happens, you've got room there for a show to do its own things, to follow other characters, to do mysteries that fill in the gaps without only chasing the overarching story where I have to write books faster than, the show's getting made if that happens. So yeah, I think there's that would be great. But yeah, I thought always like ebooks and audiobooks doing shorter adventures could be really fun. But who knows, there's so many different ways to explore. I think now that the world's here and the characters here, and definitely, we bring some other characters in the first book, but definitely in the second book, we start to bring some people in who I'd be really interested in seeing their stories outside Fetch's POV to actually, wander the streets or the world with some other people. And that won't happen in this series of books, but it would be really fun to let those other characters have their moment in other mediums. So I don't know. It's early days. I've got to probably bash out a couple more novels first, and then we'll see what happens.
I could see this being done in sort of a Harry Potter style of filming, a live action or an animated fashion. Either one, I could see that working.
Yeah, I look, and so could I. It's been the great thing of, like being an actor and having those links into LA that, was just over there and having those chats with people and, gauging some interest. And it really could go either way. Like, I guess my mind always went live action, and that is an animated thing got thrown up by someone. I was like, oh, that would be really cool. Any way it happens would be really great. Just to expand the world in that way. And, as always with those things, each becomes their thing, but they get to, broaden it out. So I don't know, and then In some ways, I realized my writing style with the first book was a little bit like playing D&D with myself. That I kind of I think I think about the plot and I piece together in the outline how the whatever kind of magical or faux magical thing's going to weave its way into the city and the other characters. But then I kind of just have to walk the streets with Fetch to work his stuff out. So if there was any kind of game, whether it's tabletop or other way to explore that world, I've got all my files of how to put it all together, so that'd be fun too.
Now, you mentioned audio stories. You actually read the story for the audiobook version of this book, Last Mile in Thunder City, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah, so even I'm trying to work out exactly when that is released in each different territory. It's hard to keep track of. But yeah, I recorded all that. I haven't done one before, so I was kind of really nervous about it. I thought, oh, I don't want to botch my own book because for some people, this will be their experience of it. But then we kind of went in, and I did, essentially an audition, and it kind of, I think it just flowed really easily. And after we did it, everyone there was like, yeah, I think I have to do it. So yeah, that is released soon. I wish I had better information, but that'll be out as well. So if you're somebody who listens to audiobooks, yeah, that'll be popping out into the world soon.
Was there anything you came across in reading for the audiobook that sort of gave you either an enhanced or a slightly different perspective on any of the characters?
It's interesting because I'd already read that book out aloud probably a few times to myself. It's kind of my little litmus test when I go through things to go, is it flowing? And probably from my acting background that I need to say it out loud. I don't know when, don't do it when I'm writing the first time, but kind of after a couple of edits, sometimes I just go, okay, I've just got to say the whole thing out loud and see how it flows. And especially when I start working with an editor and things come in, I'll kind of, we make changes and first scanning, and I kind of like, oh, because you get used to something, or I know my own syntax with things, and then we'll say it out loud. So I don't think there's anything particularly that jumped off. The main thing I had to deal with was the fact that I had to up Fetch's energy a little bit to how I guess, hear him in my head, or how I imagine someone playing him, only because, you can't have, an alcoholic drawl too much for an entire, eight, or what would then probably become, 10 hours of an audiobook. So that was an interesting thing of just lifting him up a bit, having him for a bit more articulation, be a bit more energetic vocally than is the voice in my head. And it was actually nice to see how the voice handled that, I guess. That and the original inclination was to is to really sit down and have that kind of, an effectual laziness thrown in there and be a bit more in my throat. So that's it. It was interesting to kind of lift him up a bit and go, okay, Fetch can have a little bit more energy into him than I first imagined.
Now, did your acting experience help you with reading the story and the different characters?
Look, I think it definitely helped. I hope my voice and accent teacher doesn't listen to it too closely, because like over time as an actor, you have the accents you can go to, the things you can nail, but and then sometimes, and then there are other accents there that if I was just doing that, I could probably be fine. But going back and forth, and it would like throw an Irish, just, Irish accent, a Scottish accent, an American and an English all on top of each other in a scene, dropping into each one, it's hard to do if you're doing that as an acting job, it'd be so much preparation to nail all of them in a way that's completely it. So there is a little bit of a feeling of going like, this is actually one person telling a story. I'm not actually doing a full entire performance of each character. It's one voice changing a bit for everyone, but not in the complete performance way, because I'm just not that kind of voice artist. And some ways that can also be a bit distracting on a book like this if you get too, storybook as far as like completely changing your dynamic and accent for everyone. So we'll see. I'll have to listen because I'll probably record the second one, so I'll have to listen to it all again to drop in and I'm sure I'll have a few notes for myself, but you know, it's I definitely think that acting, you know, over the years having to go in for auditions in different parts and just pull things out, you know, pull new voices and stuff out my ass and give it a go, definitely helped in the flow of this book.
So, with the book coming out in North America, are you going to be doing any book events stateside to promote the book?
Yes, I will be. I don't know exactly. It's all new for me, so I'm working out, you know, how that all works. Also, I'm, you know, this dual career of still acting and thing. And the annoying thing of it's weird having both because publishing moves very slow, and which is nice, but acting moves so fast. Like generally, you know, if you a job gets brought up after a couple of days, it's like you're on a plane off and doing it. Yeah, so everyone's always like, "What are you doing next?" It's like I won't know till I'm doing it because it's just how. You know, I mean, film, theater, not so much. Film, not so much. TV, just it's all last minute. So it's really hard to know. But I think it looks like I'm about to get a window where I know I'll be in the States and start locking things down. So yeah, if anyone's interested, follow me on Instagram and Twitter or yeah, which is at Long Luke Arnold, or I've got a blog at lukearnold.net. And yeah, back at those places, I will make sure I, you know, say everything that when I do start locking in book events and things like that, I'll be letting everyone know.
Cool. So, other than being about to finish up the edits on your second book, what are you up to these days?
Look, this has been a lot of it. I do have like a. Yeah, it's what am I? It's been strange, but I'm in a TV show called The End, which is about to start airing in the UK, Australia a bit later. I'm sure it'll come to the US at some point. With Frances O'Connor, Dame Harriet Walter, who was actually in Black Sails as well. A really cool show that kind of all revolves around the kind of dying with dignity, assisted suicide discussion, and just a really brilliant show. So it was great to be a part of. I did kind of did some theatre end of last year in Australia. But yeah, at the moment, it's been mostly get these couple of books ready, plan the next one. I've got a short film that we're just kicking into festivals at the moment. So it has been a good little chunk of doing my own creative stuff, which has been really great. My brother's a filmmaker as well, so we're always kind of planning things and working on them. It's just this weird juggling act of trying to go like, okay, you know, book a year. With all the edits, promotion, and all that stuff, keep my, you know, a foot in the acting world, and then start, you know, planning some other stuff. So it's, yeah. So The End is the next thing you can see me in, whenever that comes out in the States. But yeah, and then, you know, first book's about to come out, second one will follow shortly after, and hopefully I'll get to keep, you know, dropping a book every year or so into this world of Sunder City.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to the next one because this one, like I said, was a really fun read. Luke, thank you so much for sharing your passion and your vision for this story with us today.
No, thank you so much for reading it and for talking with me and helping get the word out there about the book. This has been really great.
The book is The Last Smile in Sunder City, out from Orbit, will be on your bookshelves on February 25th, and not sure when the audiobook will be out, maybe the same week, but I will endeavor to find out and include that in the show notes. Again, Luke, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. Cheers.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking, in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic? We've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered. In every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama, from heroic alien pets waiting for their families to herds of literal Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all at escapepod.org. So buckle up, because it's story time.
And yes, you should definitely check out The Last Mile in Thunder City if you are a fan of noir-style mysteries and magical investigations or investigations around magical items. You will find this a fast, gritty, fun read. And I'm personally inclined to check out the audiobook just to hear how Luke voices Fetch, just from that one conversation, that part of that conversation. I'm like, I have to hear this right now. But if you have any questions or comments about this interview or any other interviews we've done here, the place to call is 602-635-6976, or you can send me an email, summer@writersafterdark.com. I will respond to your messages and play them here if you want. You can listen to Writers After Dark through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Player FM, and you can also leave us a review if you're listening through Apple Podcasts and through Stitcher. You can follow us on Twitter at Write After Dark. That's WRITE After Dark. And there's also the website, writersafterdark.com. Come on over, comment on the reviews, comment on some of the other interviews we've done. Coming up really fast on episode number 50, and that will be a fun one. Keep an eye out for it. I'd like to thank everyone who's helping support the efforts here at Writers After Dark and all of the other podcasts and websites associated with the Slice of Sci-Fi universe. Thank you. Your support does help keep the lights running and the bits flowing here. If you'd like to help add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Or if you only want to donate every now and then as the feeling hits, the place to go is our PayPal link, paypal.me/scifisummer. And remember, people who sign up through Patreon, they are automatically eligible for some of the giveaway perks every month, be they advanced reader copies, finished copies, even DVDs and Blu-rays from Slice of Sci-Fi reviews and coverage. So check those out. I'd like to also throw a shout out to Sybin Quest and Shade On for providing the theme music you hear on this podcast. You want to hear more compositions by them? We have links on the website. But that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. See you next time. And remember, keep looking for your own stories.